Hi, everybody. Welcome to Blockbusting, the podcast where we love to hate movies. I'm your host, Jay Light. Joining me today, I'm so excited to have him on, the wonderful Matt McCarthy.
Greetings, friends.
Greetings. It's been, by the way, I've known you in many contexts ever since working with you on various like historical roast and fictional roast things. But my favorite context to like have learned about you in is your incredible video collection.
Yeah, hell yeah.
From TikTok. Oh my God. Just outstanding. And this is why I knew you'd be perfect for a show like this, a media literate gent.
Oh, I am well versed in the art of home video.
And I'm sure, you know, amongst all of the glory that you have there, I'm sure you have some stinkers in your collection as well. And I hope that one of them is not Don't Worry, Darling.
I own it on 4K, Ultra HD. I asked for it for Christmas. Hopefully it becomes like a midnight movie, like it should, but I don't know. It feels like, I mean, first of all, I have a shelf of dedicated just to bad movies and midnight movies, and it is featured prominently right there in the center. I watched it again just to make sure. And no, it's not good.
It's not. I hadn't watched it. I remember all the hype was coming around during festival season and that whole news cycle really turned me away from it, but I was still intrigued to see it and I didn't wind up seeing it in theaters. And I watched it by accident recently. My girlfriend and her cousin were watching it. She had they'd gone away to like get food. I'd come back from work and they were just getting back and watching the final like 20-30 minutes where the twist is revealed. And so I only saw when we find out that it's all an incel simulation.
Yeah, it's The Matrix meets The Village meets Mad Men. And in the worst way possible. Because I saw this in the theater. I saw it opening weekend here in Los Angeles. And it had been a minute since I had seen like a big budget Hollywood movie with big stars that was a mess. And I mean, people in the theater were laughing. It was such a fun experience. But when that reveal happened, there was an audible groan that just cascaded through the theater. And what's wild too is it's like, you know, Florence Pugh is incredible. Mm-hmm. And she's incredible in everything. She's incredible in this movie. They give her nothing to do. Chris Pike is also incredible. They give him nothing to do. Harry Styles is a great singer.
He's such a good singer. He should stick to that.
And the thing of it too is like Shia LaBeouf was supposed to play that character. Mm-hmm. And watching the movie with that knowledge is doubly frustrating because he would have killed it. And there's no lack of talented people, you know. I mean, Kate Berlant, Nick Kroll, it's everybody is good in it, but it's just so full of holes and it's just so paper thin. And the movie thinks it's being so like blowing your mind.
Yes.
And it's so paper thin. Like when that reveal happens, it's just like, this is weak. This is just so weak. And it brings up, because the thing with The Matrix is, The Matrix, it can answer any, the first one, can answer any logistical question you have. And they even have that scene when they're sitting there going, well, how would the machines know what chicken tastes like? Maybe that's why everything tastes like chicken. It's that whole thing, and that's just good writing. There's nothing like that in Don't Worry, Darling, because it's like, okay, so she's in the bed. Is she strapped down? Does she go to the bathroom in the bed? Does he have to like change? Like, does she menstruate? Does he change her tampons? Like, what? And what's with the earthquakes? Why are there earthquakes happening? Is it her like struggling to like come out of the coma that she's in? You know, the
right.
But then why does everybody feel the earthquakes at once? It doesn't make any fucking sense.
No.
Where's the plane? Where did the kid go? Did that first couple even really have a kid? Was it just part of the program? And then why is Olivia Wilde like, she's, oh, but her kids are alive in the simulation. But why is she a shitty mom in the simulation? She hates her kids. Why she doesn't even want to hang out with her kids. The whole thing is just like, it makes me insane.
Can you imagine signing up to be in a simulation because your kids died? Which, by the way, is a fact we find out with like 10 minutes to go in the movie tops.
Yeah. And then, like, we're all supposed to be like, whoa,
wow,
her kids died in the real world.
But you sign up to do it and then just be a shittier mom. Like, that's what you missed was neglecting your children.
I, right? And then it's like, you know, it's like, okay, they got, but because then the other thing is, why does Chris Pine's wife stab him at the end out of nowhere? She just turns heel on him, and it's just like,
get it.
And we're supposed to be blown away. She's like, I'm in charge now, or whatever dumb line she gives.
I think she says, it's my turn now,
right? And it's like, your turn to do what? You've been running a fucking yoga class the whole time in the simulation. It makes no sense.
Easy.
Like, they have one rule. They have one place. Don't go to this place in the center of town.
Uh-huh.
Yet they can access it. She rides on a bus. They have a bus that goes to the one place you're not supposed to go. I'm like, what are you talking about? Why would a bus go there? And what's the bus driver's deal? Is he part of the simulation? Is he a dude who's asleep too?
I don't know.
Like, what is happening?
It was so frustrating having watched just the end and then seeing the entire movie in context and then watching the end again and being, and I remember seeing the end and I was like, this seems pretty dumb. And then watching the whole thing all at once, I was like, this is horseshit. Like, all of it is so poorly laid out. And then they lay out all of this information for us as an audience. And then they just leave it there and go, that was cool, right? Look at all that cool stuff we left out there for us to never tie together or never, you know, make sense of.
And it's so sad too, because there's a good movie in there.
Mm-hmm.
Like, all the pieces were there and it just didn't come together. Like that, the one scene where Chris Pine and Florence Pugh are in the kitchen together is dynamic, and it's finally the two most interesting performers in the movie are finally having a scene together, and it's like, okay, is there some sort of mental chess game happening here? And then it's just, there's nothing, there's no follow-up, there's no there. The fact that they use an image of Florence Pugh holding up an empty egg and cracking it open with nothing inside of it says everything about the movie. It's like, that's your movie. Your movie is an empty eggshell with nothing inside of it.
It's its own metaphor,
and there's no
baby.
Self-awareness. The lack of self-awareness to put that in your movie that is hollow is beyond the pale. This movie is fascinatingly bad.
It's so crazy to me too, because I you know, in looking up stuff about the movie, I know it was originally written by the Van Dyke brothers, who are the grandchildren of Dick Van Dyke. It was on the blacklist. They, as brothers, had worked together on such classics as Transmorphers 2, Street Racer, Paranormal Entity, The Day the Earth Stopped, Super Shark, and all these other movies that have been all over the asylum and the Mockbuster circuit for years. And I would actually love to see that version of the movie instead of the rewrite.
I had no idea that those guys wrote this script, that it was from the, because those are the dudes that did like Titanic 2.
Yes.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
I can't. It makes so much sense now that it truly is Mad Men. Because on the movie podcast I do with Glennis, my wife, Watch It with Matt and Glennis, we do a segment called Movies from a Hat. We just take two random movie titles and just like book that movie. And this movie is so... All right, we got Mad Men, we got The Matrix, we've got The Village. What do we do? Okay, here's what I'm thinking. Oh my God, of course it's from the Mockbuster dudes. Mm-hmm.
It is. And it got rewritten, you know, they bought it and Olivia Wilde, you know, when New Line acquired it, Olivia Wilde signed on as director, Katie Silberman, the screenwriter for Booksmart, rewrote it. But I am so curious as to, and now I'm going to have to go back and backtrack it and see if I can find it from the blacklist, but I want to know what was in the original. Cause I would love to see just like the actual B movie version of this.
Right.
Cause this is trying to be too highfalutin. It's trying to be too smart for its own good. It's trying to be a movie that like makes the audience think they're geniuses for being able to understand what's going on. And be like, oh, the symbolism, man. Wow. Eyes.
Yeah.
Dancing. Yes.
The music. The motif of the eyeballs constantly showing up is like, even before the reveal happened, I was furious in my seat going, we get it.
Mm-hmm.
Eyeballs. Something with the eyes. So then doubly, when you find out it's just a little gizmo on her eyeball, is somehow... putting her in what? In a simulation? In the internet? In like, it? She's like, what? Like, the Matrix goes out of its way to just give you one or two lines, one or two visual cues of, oh, this is, there's a thing going into his spinal cord. That's why he can feel everything.
Right.
Like, oh, all of these different deals are explained and explored. And it's simple. You know, it's a high concept that they keep simple. This one, it has none of that.
No. If anything, it's a simple concept that they grossly overcomplicated.
I mean, the fact that Harry Styles' character is motivated to do this just because he's a chauvinist and he doesn't have a job. He sits on the computer all day. He listens to Chris Pine's podcast. And then she's... like an emergency room, like surgeon.
Yeah.
Even if she's like doing a residency or whatever, I mean, like she's making bank. Like she's like making like good money.
Mm-hmm.
And then he just straps her to the bed so that he can provide for her because he's psychotic. And then he has to go work for Chris Pine and doing what?
And he what talks do they about do how all day? He how shitty the job that he has in the real world is. It doesn't make any, none of it makes any sense.
You could have just gotten a shitty job.
you could have worked for the pod. You could have been like the podcast intern and also not put your wife into a coma.
Just deliver packages for Amazon. Like, like who cares?
Sign up for Postmates.
Yeah. Who cares?
I
love this movie. It is so goddamn bad.
I think the moment that I really, like, I felt a sense of elation watching this movie in a way that I did not expect to, from how bad it was, in the scene where they're all at the like the banquet hall and Harry Styles is getting a promotion and Florence Pugh runs to the bathroom to collapse and freak out. And Harry Styles is on stage and Chris Pine's just yelling, look at that boy dance.
Look at him dance. Look at him go. It's like, what is happening? What's happening in that scene?
I don't know. It's so ridiculous. It doesn't, I don't get it. I don't get what we're supposed to feel watching that scene.
Right.
It's like this whole movie as an experience is mind boggling. And it is crazy to me that there are, you know, not a bunch of people who like thought this movie was like, I get why people would think this movie is like fine to bad. It, it got a 38% on Rotten Tomatoes. It got a B minus on CinemaScore by audience polling.
You know what that all of that is because you know how like a movie will get hyped up and then you go see it and you're like, I wasn't that great. This was the opposite. Like you go and see it, and you're like, I wasn't that bad.
Yeah. That's a great way of putting it. I think because there are you say it yourself, right? Florence Pugh, I think is very good in everything she does.
She can't be bad in something, you know. Even the movie like this, she can't be bad, you know.
Mm-hmm. And I do like moments of Olivia Wilde's direction. I think that there's some parts where you can tell, like, okay, I like where your head is at from that kind of artistic standpoint. I think there's some good cinematography, but
because Booksmart is great. There's there are elements in this movie. Like there was a great movie in here somewhere, and I don't know what happened. And it's the rumor being, you know, if the love affair, like offset, you know, behind the camera was too much of a distraction, and then also like because then there is more going on behind the scenes than we're aware of. Like the whole like Shia getting fired, then him having like the video of her talking shit about Florence, like, yep. Oh, Miss Flo has a bug in her ass or whatever. And then Florence Pugh does no publicity for the movie whatsoever. It's just such a hilarious fuck you.
Yeah.
I mean, there was clearly, you know, it feels like there was a great movie potentially, but there was too many distractions.
It's crazy to me to also from a press standpoint, you have to work so hard to try and turn the negative press around for this movie. They got the cinematographer. They got Matthew Libatic to go out there and cape for the movie and be like, hey, this is one of the most harmonious sets. This is a direct quote. One of the most harmonious sets I've ever been on. You gotta go for the gaffer next? You're going to go for your best boy?
Which I didn't consider wasn't true until you insisted.
Yeah.
You know? I don't know. So, I mean, this thing is just, God, what a mess. What a mess. Glennis's favorite part is always, she goes out into the desert. She touches the building, which makes you wake up.
Mm-hmm.
And then for some reason, she doesn't wake up. She's just in her bed all of a sudden. No explanation there. She goes out into the kitchen. Harry Styles is ruining dinner and he's trying to make mashed potatoes with a bowl full of raw potatoes and a bottle of Crown Royal.
Yeah.
He's just trying to splinter open potatoes. And it's just, oh, these are going to be mashed potatoes. And it's just like, no one's that dumb.
No one's that dumb.
I don't know. And it's...
I just don't understand why there's so much about Harry Styles' character that I also think mashes up with Harry Styles as an actor to create just this really bad cocktail of a performance. And, you know, some people critically singled him out as bad. Yeah. Though also some people like Owen Gleiberman from Variety said that Jack is played by Styles with a wholesome cunning that marks him as a natural screen actor. With his popping eyes, floppy shock of hair, and saturnine suaveness, he recalls a young Frank Sinatra as an actor.
No, none of that. it's confusing. Like the things, the choices he makes are confusing. And again, I mean, is it just chalked up to like, the awkwardness and the distraction of the director and him, like, you know, messing around and all that stuff. I mean, it's just like, put it this way. There's a scene where he is like, he gets mad and it's like laughable when he's like yells and is like mad.
Mm-hmm.
And then he storms out of the room and it cuts to Florence Pugh. And her reaction informed me as a viewer. I was like, oh, like that was supposed to be like they were in two different movies. Like she was reacting to like if Shia LaBeouf had been in there killing it. Mm-hmm. And then he's just like, I'm watching him going like, wait, what is happening in this scene? And then it cuts to her and I'm like, oh, he was like way out of line there. Like, but none of that came from him. It came from her reacting, just being in character in the script. And I'm just like, this is, it's like we're getting half a movie, you know?
Yeah.
It's like we got half a movie and it just was not there. And he's just, I mean, this is tough. That's like, I feel bad for him that it's like your big budget movie debut, you know, you're going to be this, you know, triple threat, you know, huge star. And then it's just like, he, because I mean, really, at the end of the day, there's like, there's no bad acting. There's just bad directing. And I mm-hmm. think that it's, it must have been the extra, you know, the outside, the extracurricular activities happening. The
extra forces all just kind of showing up, taking a big, taking a big chunk out of the ability for all of the people on set to do well, even though 40 people came out and said, hey, this was totally fine. No problems here.
Right.
Everything normal. I have also been intrigued, you know, just to provide some contrast. I've been looking at the reviews of people on Google who absolutely loved this movie and gave it 5 stars. And I have a couple that I want to read for you and I want to hear your thoughts. A lot of them are, by the way, just saying that they love Harry Styles. A lot of these are like, Harry Styles is great and he can do no wrong. Yeah. And he's I love One Direction and he's doing great. Good work. This one is from, I got my video. Oh, come on. Here we go. Leo Lush. This movie is one of my favorites of all time. It is one of those films that the ending is all you can think about. The cast is great, with the most amazing actress, Florence Pugh, as the main character. She plays the role really well, and I can also not get over the face that Olivia Wilde not only directed the film, but stars in it as well. This film really pulls out all the stops and spoon feeds you the answers. It also leaves some loose ends. It also leaves some loose ends to let you speculate what happens. I love these types of films as it challenges the boundaries of other films. A true work of art.
Oh my God. That is exhausting.
It spoon feeds you the answers, but also leaves some loose ends.
What? What the fuck kind of disappearing act is that combination of words?
I don't get it.
What? I'm sorry. I'm just going to go out on a limb and say that that person, not smart.
I'm going to guess that this person also not smart. I'm going to guess this person probably watched this movie while being on their phone and then looked up Don't Worry Darling Ending Explained on YouTube and then wrote that review.
Oh my God.
I also have one other review here. This is from a very different standpoint. Somebody who's clearly not a Harry Styles stan. This is actually from an older woman. She claims to be a boomer.
Okay.
Let's see here. Louise Fell, 5 stars. She watched this a month ago. So Louise watched this very recently. For us baby boomers, this is a rich compilation of 50s and 60s music, recalling all our memories from the past. The irony is the movie is just that. A blast backwards in time and a thrust forward into future technology. It's a fun romp with sci-fi elements and a mystery that unfolds like a baking cake. Loved it.
That, imagine if that was the review for Blast from the Past with Brendan Fraser, and you wouldn't have to change a word.
I hope that Louise actually watched Blast from the Past instead of Don't Worry, Darling, and just somehow wound up on the wrong part of Google.
I love the idea of someone watching Don't Worry, Darling and being like, oh my God, the 60s were great. We're grooving and a-doovin'.
You know what I love most about the 50s and the 60s? Just being on a trolley.
Just
going
man.
On a trolley to nowhere.
Oh, I miss the 50s when I used to put on high heels and hike in the desert.
Yes. I loved when I was able to smoke in front of my children and yell at them.
Oh, man, that's exactly how Mom used to make mashed potatoes.
Matt, we've obviously found ourselves on the same page about this movie, but I am intrigued. This movie seems like it's, you know, it's a fun hate watch if you're really dying to watch something that makes zero sense, that you can be both confused by and furious at, and also, you know, have a joyful good time. But maybe you're in the mood to watch something good that's in this vein. What do you recommend people watch instead?
I mean, you know, like we mentioned, I mean, I like The Village. It's not Shyamalan's strongest, but I thought that was at least a thousand times more interesting than this movie. But I mean, based on this discussion, you're also like, the reveal might be tainted, but it's still good. Obviously, the first Matrix. But I mean, as far as something in this vein that's a good movie, I mean, it almost feels like she was trying to go for like a Stanley Kubrick type thing. So, I mean, on that front, if people, I always encourage people to revisit Eyes Wide Shut. That is such a fascinating movie, and
I've
especially
never seen if you, Eyes Wide Shut.
Oh, hell yeah. And especially watching it in, I don't know if it's in 4K, but like watching the Blu-ray of it, there are visual cues that I didn't pick up on. Like Tom Cruise at one point is walking and it's clearly rear screen projection behind him. And it adds to the element of like he's walking in a dream. It's fascinating. And then how the block he's on keeps changing, but he's always kind of on the same block. Also, when he goes to the first place he goes when he leaves, when he goes on this, you know, odyssey that he's on, he visits a patient. He's a doctor, a patient who has died, and his daughter is there. The patient's daughter is there. She's clearly in love with Tom Cruise. And then her fiance shows up. And then when you see her and the fiance together, you see that, oh, these people are literally like the poor man's version of Nicole Kidman and Tom Cruise. It's this hilarious moment where he sees them for what they're. And so something like that, or like, you know, a psychological. First of all, I thought that, you know, Don't Worry, Darling was going to be really sexy and have all these like hot sex scenes. And there were two really hot sex scenes. But once the movie plays out, you realize, wait, those were rape scenes. Like, this woman is unconscious in a bed and not consenting to anything. So this is doubly fucked.
Yeah, that is a point very unsettling.
Yes, highly. So, you know, yeah.
Well, that's going to really change the way all these people thought about the raunchy sex scene where she's getting eaten out and after pushing all the dinner off the table.
Yeah. This movie could have been great. It's a shame.
Could have been, but it's a shame. Yeah. But you know what's not a shame is that it brought us closer together today.
Yes, Matt. I love this. I needed a little light in my life.
I'm happy to provide. If the listeners want to check out your stuff, obviously they should listen to your podcast, Watch It with Matt and Glennis, but where else can they see your stuff?
Yeah, I'm also a big wrestling fan. If you want to check out my wrestling podcast, it's We Watch Wrestling Podcast. I do that with Vince Averill. And as you mentioned up top, my TikTok, McCarthy Redhead. I explore my video collection and I love watching blank tapes, you know, like stuff that people recorded off TV, see what's on them. I go to yard sales, estate sales, garage sales, thrift stores, and I just buy up these tapes and I'm like, what is on these tapes? And it is some of the most fun I've ever had. And yeah, McCarthy Redhead, all forms of social media. And I got my stand-up comedy album, Sober Dad, is available wherever you listen to digital music. So stream that, buy it on Amazon, do the thing. Yeah.
Do all of the above. Go support Matt's stuff and follow. It's so entertaining seeing these videos and the stuff from the collection. I love it. It brightens my day anytime it passes on my feed. You can follow me at Diet J on Twitter and Instagram, Blockbusting Pod for all the podcast socials, and follow Blockbusting Podcast on YouTube, because we're going to start putting all the old archival episodes up there, and you can get back into from the ground floor as we wind this thing on down. Matt, thanks again.
Thank you.
You're welcome. This has been Blockbusting. Go see something good for a change.